From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's Thursday night again, and that means you're back here with The Dice Men Cometh, and it's been an interesting couple of weeks in politics, because we've seen the capo. The capo has been knocked off finally.
Has he ever?
But the strange thing was, the underboss didn't get his job. In fact, what it seems like is the racketeer has now become the capo. The underboss, well, she's still the underboss. The councillor, I'm not really sure what he's doing. The enforcer, he's been dumped right out.
Yep.
Maybe he's going to go to prison, which is, could be where good old Senator Revetz maybe should belong. And the bean counter, I think he's actually going to end up sleeping with the fishes.
Mm.
It's very interesting, but they don't seem to know the rules to nothing personally in Parliament, do they?
And there is no budgie smuggler card, though, is there?
No, there's not. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
And here's our special guest.
I'm Leon.
And we're allowing Leon to speak this week.
We are.
All night.
Exactly right. So we have got Leon in to fill some pretty big shoes,
yes.
Because this week we are going to do our what we've been playing this week. We're going to talk about a couple of games. We're then going to talk about one of our favourite mechanics, a mechanic that most people would probably know in our hobby. So we're going to talk about our favourite dice rolling, dice games, games that use dice, all of that. We're then also going to have a big discussion with Leon about Kickstarter.
Whoop.
You excited about that?
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. That sounds pretty good. I reckon we should start with some music and see if we can get Leon a little bit more fired up than
that. We will get Leon fired up because I'm playing this track recommended by Leon. So if you don't like it, blame him.
That was Game Over by Skinned Red on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, one of the best live bands in the world.
Woo!
Garth, Vikings, what's up with that?
Vikings? Don't you mean Ragnarol?
Yes.
Don't you mean the game that we have played this week that is on Kickstarter right now? It is designed by an Australian called Jason Kurtzer Yang.
And it's just gone live
only a couple of days ago,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it went live Tuesday. So it's very, very hot off the presses by Endgame Games, which is Jason's company. Now, let me just read you the little bit of a blurb about this just to get you in the mood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wish, Mark, that you would have given me some soundtrack, some cold, wintry music.
Oh,
but
hang on.
No. So, the great wolf Fenrir has eaten the sun, and a great winter has descended upon the land. The sea is frozen over. There's no more crops or cattle. All you have left is a few winter stores. And, of course, your fluid Viking sense of ownership. This is a game of glory, it's a game of death and dice, where each player's aim is to raid and kill, take opponent's stores.
Like that, Garth?
No, something tough and manly like we are.
Terribly Viking.
Yeah. I can't imagine what the Vikings would do to poor Frodo, but it wouldn't be pretty. So this is a game that is all about the dice you roll. Essentially, the way it works is every player... Now, there's up to four players currently.
Yeah.
Might go to five, depending on how the Kickstarter goes. Who knows? But essentially, what you do is you'll each choose your lead character. Stop.
That's a bit more bleak for you, isn't it?
It is. It's very appropriately bleak. That's nice.
The reins of Castamere.
Exactly. So, Sorry. Anyway. Can I go now?
Yeah.
So, everyone's going to choose a character. Your character will have unique battle abilities. You will then also get your collection of dice, which are going to be your Vikings. You'll have a hero dice. You'll have a couple of berserkers, which are really good and suffer from a lot of bloodlust. You'll have some shield maiden dice that are good at saving your stores and protecting your people. And then you'll have your dog. Now, I can't think of many games that would have a dog as a dice, and I like that concept. It's nice.
It is very novel, and particularly... The dog's quite different, isn't it, Garth?
Yeah, the dog is different. We'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
But the way this works is once you have selected your Vikings, you're going to then set up your warehouse, and your warehouse will have 12 stores,
mm-hmm.
which are essentially what you're going to use at the end of every round to feed your Vikings, and that becomes very, very important. So what you're going to do, start of a round is you're going to flip over a fate card, and a fate card will give you that round unique situation. So it might say that... Vikings that are lost this round don't disappear into Valhalla. it might say that there is a whale that you find and you're able to get some more stores, which is awesome. There might be some wandering warriors that you're able to buy and get more if your Vikings happen to die in battle, which, of course, is what's going to happen. So after you flip your fate cards, you then go over and you create your raiding and your defending parties. So the way it works, everyone in secret takes their pool of dice under the table in secret. You figure out how many dice and which dice you want to use to raid, and then how many dice you want to use to defend. And the easy way to remember which dice you use, which hand you use, is right is might. So you put all the dice you're going to use to raid in your right hand. And then everyone announces at the same time and shows you how many dice they've got.
Mm-hmm.
You can use any combination of your dice. You can use all. You can use none. You can use your heroes, your shield maidens, berserkers, and your dog. Whoever's got the smallest raiding party will then go and seize the initiative in true Viking style. There's no figuring it out. It's just you grab it. And you just say, yep, I'm taking the initiative. And that player will then get to determine the order of the raids, because this is where the true meat of the game is.
And what happens if there's a tie?
If there's a tie, you just fight it out Viking style.
Yeah, that's right. It's like you grab it and fight for it. I love that.
Exactly. And you can choose to take it if you're willing to suffer glory and basically pay glory, which is one of the victory conditions. So once you've done that, the player who has then seized the initiative will determine the order. And they might say, all right, Mark, you're going to raid first, then Garth, you'll go, and then Leon, you're going to do it last. And that's, I believe, a bit of a cool mechanic, because it gets the player who has the weakest party to have a lot of control over how it's going to work. Because the raid consists of rolling dice. It's a pretty simple mechanic. All the dice have various faces. They have axes, they have shields, they have eyes, and they also have snakes. So the way a battle will be resolved is it is shields versus axes.
Mm-hmm.
One shield face will, you know, counteract any, I guess, the axes. There's single and double axes. There's also daggers, which are going to be non-blockable attacks that will kill someone. You've then got eyes, and if there's one eye in the whole battle, attacker and defender, you get to re-roll that eye result plus one other of your choice,
mm-hmm.
your side or the other side. But if there's two eyes, you just get to roll those again. And that's basically how the mechanic of the raid is worked out, is you figure out how many unblocked axes there are, and that player's the winner.
Yeah.
Now, if they're attacking, they get to choose, do I want to kill some of the defenders, or do I want to just take their stores?
Steal.
Whereas if it's the defender, all they get to do is kill someone. All they get to do is kill someone.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of cool. And then at the end of the round where everyone has done that, then it's feeding time. Now, feeding time is where this game, I guess, the stores become the timing mechanic.
Yeah.
Because the resources are a real death spiral, I've found, because there's so few of them, so hard to come by. What did you find when you played it?
Yeah, look, I have to say I enjoyed this game, and I did actually really like that the stores are the timing, because, yes, you can get some stores back, but the stores are dwindling quickly down, and you're only going to get 3-4 turns.
Yeah, well, this game only goes things for... Yeah, it only goes 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah, and
so
look, I think it stays the right amount of time.
Mm.
You know, I like that you can throw everything to an attack and maybe you'll get lots of stores. But then, of course, if you do that, then someone else is going to come and attack you and steal your stores. So there is that dilemma of, well, I can be really defensive. I'm not going to get many stores, but I might last the longest. And I know the first game we played, I actually won because I had stores left and everyone else ran out. Now, I actually got quite badly defeated in all the other rounds.
No, you got picked on. Yeah. That's the easy way. You got picked on.
We were slapping you around for half an hour, looked at the table and went, he's just won, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And it's almost like I didn't realise, because I didn't have anywhere near as many Vikings to feed, because they all got killed.
Exactly, because the one thing I didn't mention is how do you win?
Mm.
And there's three ways. There's one way is, as you won in the first game, just to be the last Viking standing. Then the second way is if all players run out of food at the same time, there's the epic battle, which is where the game gets its name.
Ragnarok!
Exactly right. And then the third way is the glory victory, which essentially every time you have battles, use battle abilities, depending on what fate cards turn up, you can gain glory. Each hero character, so one per player, has a certain amount of glory that if they've earned enough, they will be victorious. I must say, we've never come anywhere close to that in the games that we've played.
No, because you're using glory to activate those battle abilities, and then when you
die. I mean, one of the great things about this game is when you die, the game is not over.
As in your Vikings, yeah.
Yeah, your card flips over. Your hero, when your hero dies, your card flips over, and you've got sort of like a revenge side, it's called. And one of the things you can do is, I think, you pay 5 glory, and you basically come back again. Now, obviously, that chews up a huge chunk of your glory. So, I don't know. I can't ever see a glory victory, but I guess it's one possible strategy. The second game we played, I won that one, but that was during a Ragnarok where we all ran out of stores at the end.
Yep.
Look, I've really enjoyed this. What did you think, Leon?
I did like it. There was a few bibs and bobs and things about it. The first game we played, as I said, me and Garth were slapping you around quite severely. But we didn't know the game very well at the time. And then, yeah, we both just ran out of stores.
Yeah.
With such a great, mighty army. And you were sitting there the whole time just resurrecting your hero back and forth because we just kept killing him.
Well, that's because I had Odd the Undying.
You did, yeah.
And he kept undying.
He did. And look, the easy way to describe this is it's basically Dice Masters Vikings.
Yes.
You know, so you haven't got too many unique abilities. Each hero has their battle abilities where you can spend glory and alter the course of battle in that case. So that sort of offsets the card abilities on Dice Masters. I'd like to see more of them, I think. I'd like to see a bit more unique abilities for each of the heroes and maybe even for the Berserkers, Shield Maidens, and that dog, because I do love the fact that you don't have to feed your dog. Thematically, they look after themselves.
Yeah, they go off on the scavenge.
And then also in the desperate times that this winter is going to bring, you can always sacrifice and eat the dog to feed the Viking.
That's right. It's very thematic in that sense. I agree. I think there's 4 or 5 characters in the base game.
Exactly.
Now we've got those different abilities.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to play, obviously, a review copy.
Mm.
So nothing that we played is final, but it is out on Kickstarter and the rules are up there as well, which is good to see. I'd like to see more of that unique stuff, to see each character play really, really differently. Possibly even altering their extra dice.
Yeah,
just with Berserkers having a double attack, or Shield Maidens doing something else, or having the Glutton who steals two stores, or something else, you know, because I think it certainly got the opportunity for that.
Yeah, look, I think I really like the art. I like the thematic way it plays, and I like that it plays nice and quick. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Now, I will be interviewing Jason Kotzer-Yang from Endgame Games next week, and I'll have that interview on next week's show.
Great.
I did have him lined up this week, but unfortunately Skype decided to shut down worldwide. So we will have him next week. We will hear from the man himself. But I really enjoyed it. Leon, your final thoughts?
It's definitely worth a try. The base concept of the game, I think, is pretty good, and I'd like to play it a few more times just to work out a few more things. But the base idea for the game, as you said, Dice Masters Vikings, I mean, that's a pitch in a nutshell, and you can't really go wrong with that.
And you don't even have to buy those silly expansions.
Not yet, depending on how it goes. Yeah.
But they wouldn't hurt. Get some shamans in there, get some gods in there, some boats in there.
Yeah. There's plenty of ideas there.
Exactly. And look, I do like the fate cards. I like that mechanic of having every battle having a slightly different concept. He's also done a pretty good job in, scaling it so that, you know, there's an introductory game. Each of the fate cards has a skull on it, 1, 2, or 3 skulls, depending on the difficulty or the complexity of how that fate card work. So I think that's a good mechanic so that you can sort of ease yourself into it.
Mm.
The fact that you've got a couple of different victory conditions is nice. And, yeah, I agree. I think this game looks really, really good.
Yeah, look, I wish it all very well. I'm sure Leon is going to touch on it in his Kickstarter update in a while. But you know what? Before we go to our next item, I must say, gents, it's really nice to have 3 back in the studio.
Okay.
I think we make a very nice sort of bizarre love triangle.
Well, that was a bizarre love triangle, wasn't it, Mark, by New Order? You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark, you have had to relinquish the chair because you're poor.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm poor. So part of the reason we brought Leon in a little while ago is that we call him Mr. Cash Money when we don't just call him the King, because he can spend all this money on Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
So what we're going to do, we've brought him in to have a chat and see whether we can bankrupt this young man with all the projects he needs to back. Now, Leon, tell us about what you've been buying and what you've been looking at.
Right. I've been looking at quite a lot of late, mainly because I'm too lazy to actually go to my local gaming store. And I have a big TV that's connected to a computer.
Excellent.
So there's lots to talk about. One of the ones that's just come up recently is a game called Gloomhaven, and I'm going to butcher the name of the studio. It's Cephalo Fair Games, I think.
Okay.
It took me ages to find the name on the Kickstarter anywhere, and then I found it and went, yeah, that's not a word.
That'll do.
It has been up for a while, actually. It's only got 6 days left, but it's about 400% funded, so Ooh. It's well there. It's $79, $10 shipping. So
that's pretty good.
So price-wise, we're going there.
Yep.
It is a co-op card-driven tactical combat in an ever-changing campaign world.
Okay.
Descent, basically.
Yes, sounds exactly like that.
It is very, very Descent-ish. You can just look at it and see the inspiration written all over it. And, so that's the main thing. But I was looking into it, and I was just thinking, like, yeah, this looks like Descent, looks like Descent. And then I was looking at a few of the videos that are on the Kickstarter, and one of them is from the man that does all the Kickstarter. Is it Rando or Rando?
Rado.
Or
Rado,
Rado, yeah. However you want to explain it.
Yep.
At the end of his summary, he said two things which I thought were very interesting. One is he said that he believes this is guaranteed to be one of the biggest games of 2016.
Oh. Okay.
And the second thing he said was that for this style of game, this like skirmish fantasy with like a changing map campaign, he said this is by far the best one of those he's ever played.
Oh, wow.
So okay. That means, according to him, your claustrophobias, your Descent, he thinks this is better than them.
It also could mean he just likes it as a two-player.
It's true. He does like playing with his imaginary wife.
Exactly. I actually must say that he recently did a Sherlock Holmes consulting detective live stream with him and his now confirmed wife.
Oh, Jenny's alive.
Jenny is still alive.
I don't believe a word of it.
Well, who knows? I'm just saying what I saw.
Right. Well, a game that is perfect for them is another one called And Then We Held Hands. By a studio called Ludi Creations. 5 days to go, 700% funded.
Wow.
Only $19, $4 shipping.
It's good.
It's hard to explain, even after looking at all the Kickstarter. It's a non-verbal co-op game for two players. It's abstract. You play a lot of cards. But the theme is you're each one half of a failing relationship.
And this is a game or real life?
It's a game. It's a game.
I was going to say, non-verbal games with wives, they're the best games, aren't they?
So the whole point is
I'm not married anymore, so I shouldn't really talk.
You're supposed to be playing these cards and kind of guessing what the other person's mood is based off the card that's in front of them.
Oh.
And you're moving towards the common goal of moving these two gems, I believe, towards the center of a board. So apparently this came out on Print and Play about a year ago and was absolutely adored.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, like I said, 700% funded. And the funny thing was I was looking at this with my wife, and I watched several videos and read the description about this game. I still really don't have any clue about any aspect of it whatsoever, but it's intriguing enough, and, you know, $25.
Exactly. And look, there's a couple of things that I find interesting about this. The first one is the board looks pretty boring. It's it's a circle with abstract. A couple of other circles because it's abstract. But then all the cards have this really beautiful art, and it's done by the same artist who did a lot of the Dixit cards. So the art on it is really, really nice.
See, I saw that art and I thought, oh, so like you put down that picture and then your partner has to guess. Do they think that that makes them happy or sad?
Yep.
One of the videos watching when I was trying to find out what this game was about said, oh, the art on the cards has nothing to do with anything. It's the like colours on the side that is, and I, at that point I just went,
yeah.
People can check it out for themselves.
Definitely. Oh, so the art, it's Marie Cadoua, who was the original artist for Dixit, not the I think, what's his name? Piero, I think, was the second artist who came on for Dixit. And I know a lot of people really liked the first round of art with Dixit. Didn't so much like the new guy. Yeah. So it's the original one. So obviously it is a beautiful looking game.
Yeah, and the second thing I liked about it is that they've released first and second printings in the Kickstarter.
Ah.
So there was a first, you can if you backed early enough, you got the first printing.
Yeah.
And that was capped to a couple of hundreds, obviously enough to make it successful. Mm. And then they've done a second printing within the same Kickstarter campaign, and it's gone gangbusters.
And look, to me, this is a way to run a Kickstarter where you're after 5,000 and you get 38, as opposed to the other way around.
Mm,
because a lot of these people, I don't know, they're being very ambitious, I think, asking for so much money, particularly if it's the first or second game they've created. Although, it looks like these guys have made a few games before.
Yeah. As we were talking about earlier before the show, that a lot of people that scroll through Kickstarter, they'll just look at it and go, interesting. Oh, 3 days left, 50% funded. Not going to bother. Keep going. Yeah. Could be the greatest game they've ever played. They'll just scroll straight by it.
Mm, exactly right. What else you got?
Right. A game called The Network by Formal Ferret Games. I like this just because I like saying formal ferret game. 6 days left, completely funded. $35, $9 shipping. It is a 1 to 5 player game where you are TV executives.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to get the biggest stars. You're trying to make the best shows. You're trying to find the best ads to fit in with those shows. It's mainly card driven. It looks like... Yeah, pretty much everything is done in cards. So, but it's kind of like a Euro-y worker placement-y type of thing.
Sure.
But from what I've seen of it, it does look interesting. And the theme of it's really good. There was another game on Kickstarter recently that did
similar... Yeah, Prime Time, I think it was.
That was one I looked at and went, I'm interested in that, but I think it just passed me by it. Whereas this one is very, very similar. And the reviews for this before it's come out have said nothing but good things. And it's a lot smaller, which is a good thing.
Well, it's a really novel theme, isn't it? It's not... Mm. Well, I was about to say it's not something that's been done before, but you just told us it has. But it is a really novel theme for a Euro game in particular.
Yeah, well, the other time when I saw it a bit earlier on Kickstarter was the first time I saw that theme and went, woo! Oh. And then there's another one pretty much straight away. So that Deep Impact Armageddon thing all over again. But slightly lower scale. Queen Games are at it again.
Queen Games, curse you!
Yeah.
A small game, I won't take up much time on it, called Heroes Gold, where you play a pack of monsters, and you go after guards, and then you take their treasure, and you're trying to take over a kingdom and what have you, and take over the king.
And basically, you're just funding Queen Games' pre-order.
I was going to say, did you say Queen Games a pack of bastards? That's about sums it up.
I think I said that, but it was something along the lines of... but it looks like a small... relatively easy, like family style game, and I think if shipping to Australia plus the full game's a little less than $40.
Okay,
so but Queen Games, why? What are you doing?
Exactly.
Why?
Which is better than the last Queen Games one I saw, which was I think the Reiner Knizia game a little while ago, where the game was $40 and the shipping was $50.
Yeah.
Oh, there was one I saw the other day and went, ooh, interesting, and was going to write down stuff about it. Looked at it and the game was $30 and the shipping was $60.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
And I straight away, just as I said before, sometimes you see not funded and keep clicking. I saw that and went, nah, don't care. Yeah. This could be my favourite game ever. Don't care.
Yeah, there's probably two things that do that for me. One is that, where you click to pledge and it tells you your shipping cost and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then the second one is that shipping will be calculated at the end of the campaign. Yeah. And look, that's all mini stuff usually. Mm. So, Leon, you'll probably have a different opinion to me. But that unknown, when it's coming from somewhere far away to here, can just add a lot.
I've only done that for, I think, about two games, and they were both from bigger companies.
Yep.
And they said in their Kickstarter description, we pretty much guarantee it's going to be between like $20 and $30.
Yeah, okay.
Because there has been, I'm pretty sure there's been one or two where... the forecast shipping was something like, you know, $14, and the shipping at the end ended up being $30 or something like that. It was a ridiculous amount between the forecast and the real. And I guess that's what, you know, Garth is saying we're wary of, is that sort of thing.
Exactly.
One thing that actually just finished on Kickstarter recently, but you're going to be available shortly afterwards anyway, so I thought I'd just mention it. You know how when you get home from work and you think, oh, I might have a quick lie down? before life kicks in. So what you do is you go grab your copy of Dead of Winter, you put that under your head,
yep,
and then you go grab your copy of Five Tribes and you nestle that in front of you. But then you realise, hang on, this is weird. And it's also very pointy. So what you need is me pillows.
Yes.
Yes.
Which I think you might have talked about before on the show, I'm not sure.
Mentioned briefly.
But so basically they are give or take 1 foot by 1 foot pillows that are shaped like meeples. And there's six different colours. And the campaign was successful. You can now go to a website called Top Shelf Fun, and they're going to be available on there soon. I almost backed this and got one of every colour.
Yep.
I showed them to my wife. She was rather excited. Again, the shipping was murder.
Yeah.
It was like $15 a pillow, I think nearly $15 a pillow shipping.
Wow.
And it got maybe $10 better if you got like six of them.
Yeah.
So, it's probably cheaper to get cats. And like...
Yeah, but harder to herd.
Well,
how good would it be to have a 1 foot by 1 foot meeple and then just create your five tribes out of that?
Yes, a life size.
Or Carcassonne or something like that. Mm. Oh,
that would be really
beautiful.
Cool. All right, the granddaddy, the one that I've come to talk about that's taken up half a page in my big old dirty notebook. The Other's Seven Sins. Not that it really needs the advertisement, but no. I'm going to do it anyway. Cool Mini or Not, who are the kings of Kickstarter.
Yep.
Mainly because they've been very successful. But anyone that's got any interest in Kickstarter at all, especially if you're looking to make one yourself, just model it completely after them. Just rip it off completely because they do it. They do it to achieve their art, their presentation, their videos, their stretch goals especially. But I understand smaller companies can't really do that.
Sure.
But still. 12 days to go. It's 600% funded.
And that 600% is, what, probably $600,000 or
so? Last time I... it's into the 600,000 odd at the moment. It is $100, and the shipping afterwards is going to be about $25.
Okay.
So it's not the cheapest, but for what you get in the box is pretty good. So it's a horror game where you play as a group of guys called the Agents of Faith, and you're defending the last city of free humans against the forces of sin. So each time you play this game, you take your guys, which is lots of different characters, mm-hmm. especially if you kickstart it and get some exclusive ones. There's bruisers and fixers and snipers and leaders and all that kind of jazz against the forces of sin. And there's obviously seven different forces of sin. At the moment, I think there's about four of them unlocked.
Wow, they're still not unlocked.
No, there's the...
Wow.
The fourth one, I think, is getting unlocked at the moment.
Oh, wow.
And these sins will be... expansions later on.
Yes.
So
good plan.
This is one of those things that if you want an interest in this game, Kickstarter is the way to do it, because then you don't have to worry about it. But yeah, all the sins play completely differently, and all the characters play completely differently, and as you go about with your characters, you can take this thing called corruption, which makes your characters stronger, but it also means they're more likely to turn on everybody else and go towards the dark side. And as I said, since Cool Mini or not, there's the miniatures are just amazing looking.
Yeah, and this is designed by Eric Lang.
I was about to say, yes.
Yeah.
Very important. Eric Lang, so Arcadia Quest, Chaos in the Old World, Dice Masters, most especially of late, Blood Rage, which is probably going to be very close to Game of the Year in a lot of people's eyes, from what I've read. So he's behind it again, and I think he's behind this even more than he was in Blood Rage. Like, this was his baby, and Blood Rage got him to this baby. And... yeah, it's absolutely spectacular. And there is, like always with these type of miniature games, there is extra stuff you can get straight off the bat. So extra packs of characters and stuff like that. But there's plenty of stuff still left to be unlocked. And if it's anything like your Blood Rage or the last game, Besiege, I think these guys did, the last two or three days, you'll see sometimes...
Yep, it'll go berserk.
Sometimes there's nearly, hundreds of thousands that just pop up overnight. But it's definitely worth checking out. As I said before, I mentioned Descent. When I was on here last, mentioned Lobotomy, which is like Descent in the Sane Asylum. This is Descent, but kind of in a city with horrible, icky, Cthulhu-y type thing.
And I love that the Agents of Faith, just like the Agents for Smersh, you know, you got to have a good acronym. It stands for the Federal Authority for the Interdiction of Transdimensional Horrors.
Oh, of course it does.
And it's all...
Of course. You had to read that?
Yes.
You had to look it up?
And it's all sorts of different things like humans and werewolves and vampires and creatures and stuff that are just like, well, come on, we don't want to completely destroy the world. Whereas the Agents of Sin are just like, no, destroy the world. And there's another group of humans called, I think, the Hellfire Club. And they work with the Aegis. From the miniatures, I wouldn't surprise me if you had. And yeah, they work with the bad guys. And there's also things like corrupted hobos and corrupted doctors and corrupted cops and corrupted firemen and corrupted nurses that will add to the forces of sin. Yep. And it's just, it looks awesome.
We used to have a corrupted hobo. We used to do this radio show with this guy. Any more, Leon?
Actually. I mainly wanted to get to talking about that, I might have skipped over... Did I skip over anything good?
Well, should we talk about the one that we played this week?
Ragnarok.
Yeah, I did briefly look at Ragnarok as well. As you said before, by an Australian developer, and we've talked about it, and we're fans of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's one that everyone should definitely check out. I was going to look at some more Australian ones, but oddly enough, Kickstarter went down when I was trying to write this list, which is the first time I've ever seen happen.
Yeah, well, I can tell you there isn't much. There's one RPG apart from Ragnarok. So Ragnarok's only been out for a couple of days now.
Yeah.
It's about $5K funded out of a
35,000
target. Yeah. So there's plenty of time to go, about 13%. Look, the game is, I think, $69, $70 for the base game.
Mm.
Obviously, we're looking forward to seeing what kind of stretch goals and what have you comes out very, very early days, and no doubt Jason will talk to you about it and let us know.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to fill us in.
Yeah, the only other one I wanted to mention was Tabletopia, the online game engine that is probably finishing now.
It's very close.
Or within a couple of hours, but it's got over $115,000, 600% funded. It's great that it'll happen. I look forward to seeing how this progresses. I'm still happy with Board Game Arena.
Fantastic. Mm. Well, look, we'll be back to talk more games in just a minute. There we were going, stepping with the frowning clouds. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Tonight it's Mark and Garth and Leon here talking about all the games we love to play. Garth.
Yes.
You know there's one type of game us dice men like to play.
Is there ever and it is Cranium? No. Monopoly. No. Ah, no, look. As the name suggests, we kind of like dice.
We like dice.
We like dice. We love dice. That's why we cometh, because we are the Dice Men cometh. So, I wanted to start this conversation on a high note and talk about...
Oh, you went wrong there then.
...some of the games we like that involve dice.
Oh,
and I guess we also want to talk about games that use dice differently. So they're not just your roll and move. They're not your boring same old dice. So where should we kick this off, Mark?
Well, look, we had a bit of a chat during the week, Garth.
Yes.
And I talked about, maybe getting a top five and then some honourable mentions.
Mm-hmm.
I failed. I failed to go anywhere near that many. But look, I'll roll out a couple of my honourable mentions.
Wow.
Look, I think the first one that must be mentioned, there can't be a discussion of dice games without mentioning, of course, that game, that famous game by Edwin S. Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
A household name around here, from Milton Bradley, first produced in 1956. Of course, it's Yahtzee.
Yeah.
And look, Garth, we were just saying, you and I don't mind a game of Yahtzee even to this day.
No, it's true. And my household has two complete sets of Yahtzee, one from when I was a kid. My son got one only a few years ago, and we certainly love that. I also play it on Board Game Arena.
Yeah, me too.
Which, the whole point of Yahtzee is to roll the dice and to hear the sound and to see it all work. Sometimes it can't happen, which is Board Game Arena being handy, but there's nothing wrong with this game. It's
look, how many games have the roll three times mechanic, you know, that they've stolen directly from Yahtzee?
Exactly right.
Look, the other one I want to mention, Sid Sackson, of course, a very famous game in board games. His game in 1980 with Parker Brothers, Can't Stop, which I didn't know about it. I think it seemed to be a bit of an American phenomenon, but I've certainly played it online.
Yep.
And another great, 5 minute time filler with a real push your luck element.
Yep.
Where you're rolling, moving up the ladder, and of course on the 2 and the 12 you've only got like 3 spots on the ladder, whereas on the 7 you've got 15 spots, 20 spots on the ladder, and you keep going until you bust, basically you can't move any more spots.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun. But a couple more honourable mentions, just for the different way they use dice. Escape Curse of the Temple with that speed mechanic, and of course now they've come out with the zombie version.
Yeah. I'm so close to buying that yesterday.
Oh, really?
Zombie 15, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, Zombie. Well, there's Zombie 15 and there's also Curse of the Zombies.
Kingsburg, which sort of, I don't know, it wasn't really the first Euro game to use dice, but it used dice differently where there's stuff you can do with all the dice always. It's not like ones are bad.
Yep.
And I really like that. And again, on the Euro theme, Troyes, or as we call
Troyes,
by Z-Man. Again, really using dice in a Euro sense. Roll Through the Ages, the Bronze Age, which is a sort of a very basic civilization building game with dice. And again, the dice don't have numbers on them. You know, you've got your food and your workers and everything like that. And just recently they brought out the Iron Age in a Kickstarter. Matt Leacock brought out the original. The expansion was done by Tom Lehman of Race for the Galaxy. And also one of my favorite games, and I'll lead into my list then, To Court the King. Now, a lot of people don't know about this game.
Well, that includes me.
Yeah, look,
is this from the 70s and 80s too?
No.
Oh, okay.
To Court the King. Well, although, it's up there.
What's the 70s?
2006. Shut up, Leon.
That's when Mark was in his prime.
2006 by Amigo Spiel. Tom Lehman, as we said, did this before he did Race for the Galaxy. The dice are just... have the pips 1 to 6, but you've got these cards that are basically people in a court. You start off rolling 2 dice, and what you're doing is you're rolling combinations to let you buy these cards. Some of these cards will give you more dice. Some of these cards will let you change the pips on the dice, and you're building up to where you've got to be able to get a minimum of 7 all the same. When you can do that, you take the king. Once you do that, everyone gets one more turn, and whoever's got the highest group of dice all the same is the winner.
Okay.
So it's quite novel. I really like the moving pips between dice and things like that, but it's really simple to teach. The art looks really nice, To Court the King. So that's one in my 7 top dice games. What about you, Garth?
Excellent. Well, look, yeah, I thought about it, and again, trying to come up with a top five was just crazy town. So what I thought, I looked at ones again that use dice a little bit differently, and one that sprang to mind that I've played quite a bit is Quantum. So Quantum's only been out a few years
now. That game
now.
Is so good.
Exactly. Wasn't even on my list.
Yeah, so Quantum, you know, the art on the box looks fantastic. It looks like you're going to go and explore the galaxy and all of that kind of stuff. When you get the game, it's a very abstracted, you know, top-down view. But the thing is, all your dice numbered 1 to 6, the numbers mean it's a different ship.
Mm.
They can move in different ways. They have different unique abilities. Your number 1 is your battle cruiser that can only move one space, but it can do extra attacks. Your number 2 can piggyback another ship along the way. Your number 3 can move diagonal. No, your number 3 can swap places with another one.
Yep.
Your number 4 can do something else. Your number 5 can move diagonally. And then your number 6 is your scout. So it's a really weak ship, but it can move across the board really, really fast. And really what this game is, you're just trying to colonize planets. You're trying to put your energy cubes on enough planets to be able to be victorious.
And this is quite a new game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only been out maybe, what, 3 years or so?
I think it came out 2 years ago, because I was actually a judge for the Australian Board Game Awards a few years ago.
Well, la-di-da.
La-di-da indeed.
Name dropper.
And this game came out that year and it wasn't on it, so I sent Manny an email saying, why not? And he basically came back saying, it's not really readily available in Australia.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I said, well, that's all well and good, but it's better than the 10 games you've asked me to judge. It's a game that it's about a tenth as popular as it should be.
Yeah.
It is a very, very good game for people of any age. And it's actually quite not a bad little learning game for simple mathematics and stuff as well. But people say that and go, but no, it's really
And it looks great. The really dice are massive.
Okay, because it
really
is on
nice.
Board Game Arena, which is where you tried to get me to play at Garth, and I couldn't be bothered to read the rules and failed miserably.
Correct. That'd be perfect for that, I think.
But it would, it's interesting because when you talk about it, immediately I think of one of my favourite dice games, Alien Frontiers.
I had that on my
list. Yeah, I bet you did. Because, again, you're using the dice are your ships. Depending on the numbers, you can do different abilities. I'm not going to go into all different things you can do, but it's so clever. I mean, it was one of the very first Kickstarter games.
Yep.
And I guess proved the whole concept of Kickstarter that, you know, it's not just for little games that are a hit with few people. It was been really popular. So many expansions.
And have you seen the rocket dice that came out? Oh, that looks cool.
A brilliant game by Clever Mojo and Tori Neiman, Alien Frontiers. I love it. One more I'm going to mention. I'm sure this is on all of our lists.
Mm-hmm.
King of Tokyo, of course, by Richard Garfield.
Scratch it off as we go.
ILO in 2011. It's just become my go-to gateway game. Great. Big chunky dice, monsters battling over Tokyo or New York, whichever one you like. Look, I can't say enough good things about this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, Leon said it's just a perfect game when you were here last time. I agree. My kids love this game. Again, it doesn't overstay its welcome. My daughter absolutely loves it, but she'll only play as long as she's Cyber Bunny. And she wins. She wins over and over again, but it's great for all ages. They know how the concept works, but it's a fantastic game. It is perfect for what it needs to be. And those dice are awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've played it with my family members who aren't gaming people in the slightest.
Yep.
And they absolutely loved it.
Excellent. Now, another one I wanted to talk about was Machikoro.
Oh.
Because Machikoro, you know, spieled as Yara's nominee, was it, for last
year?
Yes. You know, and lost to Colts Express.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. We played that on BGA as well.
It's a good game.
I'll take your word for it.
It's not Machikoro, but it's good.
No, so Machikoro, look, it's very simple because for the vast majority of the game, you're only rolling one die. That's all you're doing. You just get to roll one die and do something based on that. I think it adds a nice little mechanic with the card, almost drafting element where you're rolling your die, you're seeing what your cards allow you to do and going from there. I thought that was a really nice use of the die mechanic. And it's, again, a bit of the push your luck because sort of, when you get to the second two-thirds of the game, you've got the opportunity a lot of the time to buy the second dice and go from there.
Yeah, look, funny, Garth, you should say interesting use of the die because I didn't even include this one in my list, not because I don't like it, but because I thought, really, it's a card game.
Yep.
And a tableau-building game, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And much like Settlers of Catan, I wouldn't call Settlers of Catan a dice game.
Sure.
You know, it's a resource management game. So I didn't include it for that exact reason.
Okay. So you haven't got it. No, I
certainly can appreciate your point of view, though. But I'll tell you what, there are so many great dice games. We're going to come back in just a minute and talk about more of them. Please die. Just a brief interlude there from Silverchair with Open Fire or Anna's Song with the Dice Man Cometh. We've got a few more minutes to talk about dice games. Look, one I'll mention quickly, you might have seen on Twitter. I've been playing this one with my sick son at home. Well, we got back into it. Quarriors, of course, the original of these dice building games by Eric Lang and Mike Elliott from WizKids. And, of course, that has now led into all those Dice Masters.
Yeah.
You know, with elephants and turds and all other Dice Master variants. Now, Leon, I know you're fond of a few dice games. Give us a couple of quick ones.
I do love a dice. Bang, the dice game.
Ooh.
Yep. Somebody basically went, what are the two biggest games at the moment? Oh, it's probably King of Tokyo and Resistance. What do people like? Oh, probably Cowboys. Bam, done. Bang the dice game. That was actually on one of that list for that gaming awards.
Yeah, okay.
Pushed really. I think it came second or third. It was pushed really highly.
All right.
Elder Sign.
Yep.
A game that I really like. A lot of people get into board games, I think, these days because of those big horror-y games. I think it's really cool. I know I was definitely one of them. Elder Sign, you could play it with like 10 people in like half an hour, but you're just throwing dice and killing squishy things. It's brilliant.
Excellent.
Ancient Terrible Things, another game I picked up about a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
People can look it up. But the thing I want to
has dice in it.
The most important thing, Dead of Winter, one of my favouritest games ever. The most anticipated board game I think I've ever been waited for. Like, I waited by the door for that to arrive. And in that, there is a dice called the Exposure Dice.
Yeah, 12, we don't like that dice.
No, it's not. But it's a 12-sided dice, and there's one face on those 12 sides that if you roll it, your character dies. And then it could lead to a chain reaction. I've played games of this that's lasted 2 hours, 3 hours, never happened once. First time we got it out of the box, first game we ever played, that dice, 6 times in a row.
Oh my God.
The first 6 times that die had ever been rolled on a table in my house, 6 bites.
Oh, wow.
Which I don't even want to think about the math of at the moment, because it would just put me to sleep halfway through it.
I'm sure John Gilmore and Isaac Vega are just going...
And zombie dice, it's like $10 and it's just a bit of a laugh.
Excellent. Well, speaking of dice that I hate, this may not qualify for you, Mark, as a dice game, but Flashpoint. How nasty are the dice rolls in Flashpoint when you know that it doesn't matter what you roll, things are going to burn down and your poor little firemen and women and the poor little people that you're trying to save, they're going to die based on this roll. You're probably going to blow up the combustible liquids and everything. It's excruciating rolling those dice.
I didn't have it on my list again, but look, it just goes to show there are so many games with... In fact, how many games are there that don't have dice? Dice are so critical. One I'll give an honourable mention to, it was actually the top of my list. I'm really enjoying this game at the moment. I'm playing it on Yukata as well as in real life. Castles of Burgundy, again, doing something really different on a Euro theme with the dice where it doesn't, you know, ones or sixes, whatever, they're all useful. It's just what you use them for, and it's a way to manage your resources. So I'm really enjoying that one by Stefan Feld.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, I always have to mention the RPG side of things purely because there is very few things like Star Wars RPG, for example, that you have a hard time fitting all the dice in your hand. There's so many modifiers and there's so many different sizes and so many different colours, and it just feels really, really cool. We got a bit bogged down in that, and it makes it hard to understand the result that you've rolled. But geez, it feels awesome to roll that fistful of dice.
Oh, yeah. Any more you want to mention, Leon, just quickly?
Yeah, just thinking of myself, of my favouritest games of all times. The ones right near the top that have dice in them are Summoner Wars, which I love to death, and Ghost Story.
Yeah, okay.
Cool, which have evil dice that are really sticky and weird that we tried to wash and they're still sticky and weird.
Oh, yeah. Look, one more for me, just because it's different. It has the poker dice by friend of the show Bruno Cathala and his friend Ludovic Morblanc from Asmodee Dice Town with the cowboy theme and the poker dice. Again, it's really friendly to teach to new people. Look, guys, that's all we've got time for.
Wow, what a busy show.
Episode 86 has been huge. Leon, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll definitely have you back again if you play your cards right.
Yep.
Not roll these dice right.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. So, play more games. It's been the 24th of September. I've been Mark.
I'm Garth.
And he's Leon.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, you can say that yourself, Leon. And goodbye, we're going to go. Mate. Have a good night and play lots of games. We'll see you next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.